In a world full of cruelty and depravity, where the lawless make the law, and the good are preyed upon by the bad, two unlikely heroes will emerge. Wait, what the hell? They're just gonna bitch about it?
That's kind of their thing!
Okay, whatever. Two crazy Florida men named Bill.
And that is Bill.
And Todd.
That's Todd.
Drinking beer and talking about true crime. Yeah, just talking about it. Not doing anything about it. Welcome to Crimes, Killers, Cults,
and Beer.
A true crime comedy podcast.
What are you drinking tonight?
You should ask.
Now we got to figure out a way to come in from that.
Right. Come in from that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I figure since, you know, we're Florida men, I would drink a Florida Man. Where is it? There it is. Florida Man, made by Cigar City Brewing over there near you in Tampa.
Cool.
India Pale Ale. And I've got something else to drink too, but I'll do it now too. I'm saving this for later, but I saw it in the store, so I had to get it. It's the Hard Mountain Dew. Where is it? Where's the camera? Damn it. I have a new camera too, by the way.
Yeah.
So I got the Baja Blast, multi-pack. And before anybody gets up Twitter or whatever saying that you pronounced it wrong, I know it's pronounced Baja, but Baja just sounds better.
It does. I agree.
So I have that. I have this for later, and Powder Blue is full of ice for that later.
Powder Blue is going to become sentient before too long.
Yes, Powder Blue is. What was I going to say? Shit, I don't know.
The cult of Powder Blue.
Yeah, the cult of Powder Blue. Yes, Powder Blue is
Powder Blue sippy cup. The Powder Blue Sippy Cult. There we go.
Powder Blue Sippy Cult. Yes. Powder Blue is quickly becoming an entity in its own right. And yeah, so there's that. But yeah, Powder Blue is sitting there full of ice waiting for my Mountain Dew that I couldn't fit in the fridge because there's so much other shit in there right now.
So,
and we all know what you're drinking, but go ahead and tell us.
Bud Light.
Yes. We knew that.
In a brown bottle. I still like women. So, little announcement, and then we'll get into it because we got a special episode coming next after this one.
Oh, that's right.
We're going back to our Gary Ploche or Plouch episode.
Mm-hmm.
And we're interviewing Gary's son, Jody, who was the victim and the survivor in that case.
That's cool that he agreed to do that.
Yeah. And we're going to, I mean, we already covered Gary's story in our episode. So, and then he actually reached out to me after I put it, you know, after I published it and everything. And we've been talking and, yeah, he's going to come on. So we're not really going to talk about his story unless there's, you know, something that he wants to bring up or whatever. I mean, that's fine, but I've already got a direction that it's going. And if you want to know what that is, you're just going to have to tune in because it's going to be interesting.
Hopefully Bill can find out how to say his last name properly.
Yeah. We'll do that before we hit record. So I'm looking forward to that. I mean, he's a really cool guy,
and right on.
I'm really looking forward to having him on with us. So,
hell yeah!
Now we got to go cult.
Yeah,
we got part two of Duped by an Angel,
and also, you can't see it because you're just listening to us, but I am finally in my room. In the back of the house.
Yes. Not finished yet.
No, it's not finished yet.
But it's functional.
Yes, it's functional. No more dining room table.
It's still a work in progress, but it is functional.
Yes, that's why I'm zoomed in so close so you can't see all the crap in the background. if you're watching.
So
anyway,
maybe now we'll get those videos up on YouTube.
We might.
So in part one of Duped by an Angel, Angel's Landing, and Lou Castro, we basically found out about his childhood, what little bit of information out there that there was. We found out that he liked, that he had these delusions of grandeur, that he's, some angel. He's either 1,000 years old or thousands and thousands of years old or whatever. And it pretty much changed, like I said in the promo, he changed his story so much. He changed his story so much it would make an owl. It would give an owl whiplash.
Right. Anyway.
So he started basically duping these people into taking out life insurance policies on themselves, making them believe that death was the ultimate goal to get to the other side. and then these people started dying, and he's collecting all the insurance money.
Yeah.
He even killed his, second in command. So.
What a piece of shit.
Yep.
That is a big pile of shit.
I was waiting for that.
Yeah, I know.
And he also
slow on the draw.
And he also was taking part, with, having his way with the teenage daughters of one of the members.
Yes.
And unfortunately, we got some of that coming up.
Yeah. I'm ready. I'm prepared. You warned me, even though you shouldn't have to. I mean, I should expect shit like that.
Well, you've heard it before, because we had to redo part one, and this part was in part one, but it should have been in part two. So it's in part two.
Oh, okay.
So you've heard it already.
Oh, well, okay. Anyway.
So we're just going to pick up from there. They're at the Angel's Landing compound in Plano, Kansas.
No ado today?
That was the ado about the next episode.
What if I had ado?
Do you have ado?
No.
Oh.
I have a funny random. I had a funny random thought today, though, that might be interesting.
Hit me.
Okay, I realize this is about a month late. That wasn't the funny part, though. It's a month late, but I heard a song on the radio that made me think of it, and I thought, holy shit, did anybody wake up Billy Joe at the beginning of last month? You don't get it.
I do.
Okay. You sure?
Yeah, because September ended.
Yeah, there you go. Like I said, it was just a random thought that I had. Anyway.
So. Oh, boy.
Yeah,
it's going to be
I've been waiting all night to do that. So.
Anyway, we also met the narcotics officer who ultimately would wind up bringing him down, and that's how we ended part one. His name was Ron Goodwin, and he was a Kansas detective, and he was he didn't buy the story about what was going on at Angel's Landing. He actually thought that it was a drug running operation because of all the money flowing into there, all the big expensive cars and toys and all that stuff. And
yeah,
so he's just like, something's rubbing him the wrong way about Angel's Landing. So he's just like, I've got my eye on you. I'm watching you. So anyway, part two. So, Patricia's husband, this is right after Patricia had been killed, drowned, hit in the head and then drowned. Mm-hmm. Brian Hughes collected the insurance money and handed it over to Lou. It totaled over $1 million. And right. Lou was back, and the commune would run like a well-greased machine until the money dwindled down again and Lou needed another victim.
Well, yeah, you know, that happens.
So Lou never once discussed bringing Patricia back to life after she'd been dead. The only person that he had discussed that with was Patricia. While she was still alive, obviously.
Well, yeah. Here, I'm going to bring you back to life to ask you if I could bring you back to life.
Yeah. So everybody bought the official story that it was an accident, and Lou had never mentioned anything about bringing Patricia back to life to anyone except for Emily on the day of the murder. And, you know, she was the only person other than Patricia that had said anything about that to. And Emily had questions, but she never came forward with them. And of course she didn't, because she was a prisoner completely brainwashed by Lou.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what a piece of work this guy is.
Huh?
I said, what a piece of work this guy is.
Yeah. So this is when the fleet of cars came rolling in. He threw outrageous parties, and he donated thousands of dollars to the police for a new police car.
Outrageous parties. He pay heavenly bills?
No, he didn't. Yeah, he paid the bills. With blood.
Oh, so I guess it wasn't heavenly then, really. Hellishly.
Hellishly. There we go.
Yeah.
But this kept the police off of his back, but not Ron Goodwin. He was digging into Lou, and of course, Lou had no convictions under the name Lou Castro. Lou Castro was squeaky clean, and nobody's that squeaky clean.
Nobody.
What he did find linked to that name was a mention of Lou Castro in an obituary from Mona Griffith, the plane crash.
Oh yeah, the plane crash.
So Goodwin looked into the details of the crash, and something didn't add up. The landing gear was down, but the rear flaps were up. If the plane was having equipment failure and had to make an emergency landing, both would be up in order to slow the plane.
You'd think. I mean, I'm no pilot, but...
Something was up with this new death, and Ron did some good old-fashioned detective work. And he didn't have a warrant, and there was no reason to issue one at this point. So he dug through their trash, and he was looking for drug evidence, but he was also looking for fingerprints, and he found neither. He literally had nothing other than a hunch.
Okay.
But Lou's money was once again dwindling, and he needed a new partner. I mean, a new insurance policy to exploit.
Right.
He had Brian, Jennifer, and two other people take out insurance policies. And Brian was depressed after his wife Patricia's death, and he was even reported to have been seen sleeping in the bed with the framed photo of their wedding.
Oh.
Yeah, he took it hard. And you would think that, okay, let's just put Brian out of his misery.
Yeah.
But that's not what he did.
No, of course not.
He counseled Brian, and instead of cheering him up, he started filling Brian's head with the benefits of crossing over.
Oh, no.
Patricia was in a better place, and crossing over was everybody's ultimate goal. I want to smash Lou's neck with a steel baseball bat. But Lou then had a vision saying that he would be reunited with Patricia in March of 2006. And it was March of 2006 at that point. Okay, so I got ahead of myself. That was what he had in mind, put him out of his misery.
Yeah.
I don't know why I was thinking that he didn't kill Brian.
I don't know either, because you were setting it up so perfect that he was the next one.
Yeah.
I mean, but, really? Okay, yeah. His wife died. He's like,
no, I just really, for whatever reason, I remembered it that it wasn't Brian. I was thinking that it was Jennifer that was next.
Oh, okay.
So, but so no, I just
anyway,
yeah. So Brian, and at this point, I was just hoping he'd grab his daughter and get the hell out of there, but he didn't. He left his daughter with Lou and. While he went back to South Dakota to visit family. Oh, and no. he was scheduled to leave out a few days later after a long talk with Lou. And I'm guessing it was to tell the family goodbye. But if that was the case, you'd think he'd take his daughter with him and leave her with his family. But his daughter was a beneficiary on Brian's insurance policy. So you figure it out.
Yeah, that's not hard. You don't need to be a rocket scientist to figure that one out.
And what do you think is a more fucked up game plan here? The murder trust or Angel's Landing?
Oh, boy, that's tough.
It is, because the murder trust is just one, you know, one victim.
It was just one.
Angel's Landing is, I don't know, it's just the insanity. The murder trust takes the case.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing, though. If Mike the Durable had just laid down, there wouldn't even be a story about it because he'd have just been dead. They'd had the money. I mean, there's a story because the guy just wouldn't die.
Right, that's true. So, yeah, this is a more sadistic.
I think, yeah, damn. I think this one is a little more, yeah, sadistic maybe. That's probably the word, but.
Dark.
It's definitely.
Dark.
We'll just say that. I really was going somewhere with that, and it just went away. Right in mid thought, it just totally went away. But anyway,
kind of. No, I won't go there.
Yeah, don't go.
That was going to be a dig at my a personal dig. By the way, that night I wasn't going to dig on you. So
oh, okay. I don't mind. You know,
but just, you know, I was just letting you know that what I was setting myself up.
Okay. But yeah, no, I think that yeah, because like I said, the murder trust wouldn't even been a thing if he had just died.
Right.
You know what I mean? There would be no Michael Malloy story, I don't think.
No, and they probably would have gotten away with it too, because
it hadn't been for those meddling kids.
but they probably would have gotten away with it because of the fact that, you know, the guy was a known alcoholic and all that stuff. And,
oh yeah,
and the way that they set it up initially with with somebody posing as a relative, that
yeah,
so, more thought went into this than what fucking Lou was doing.
Yeah, he was just like, all right.
Take out a life insurance policy and I'll kill you.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So Brian went to his auto shop and he was working on a car. And he was working underneath it when the jack slipped, crushing him.
Ouch.
And Brian was a very good mechanic and a slipping jack was a rookie mistake.
Oh. Yeah.
It's a rookie mistake that you only make once.
Indeed. But I mean, I understand like a slipping jack, but you know, shit happens. There's enough videos of that shit on YouTube.
True. But some cultists, as well as friends or relatives, thought that it was an accident, and others thought that it was a suicide that Brian had been duped into by Lou.
Jesus.
All right. Put a knife in that.
Oh, shit, I wasn't ready to put a knife in anything there.
David, the man who had been brought in by Brian, thought it was strange considering it was first Patricia and now Brian.
Yeah, that's a little odd.
Once again, Detective Goodman smelled something fishy, and it wasn't imported frozen seafood day at the Wichita Fish Fry either.
Oh, God. All right.
That's one of the benefits of living so close to the ocean. Fresh seafood.
Yeah.
And there is definitely a difference in the taste.
Oh, no doubt.
Because that frozen stuff that you get at Walmart, I guarantee you, if like you cooked one that was frozen and one that was fresh, and then told me to taste them both and tell, I'd be able to pick out the fresh one.
Oh yeah, no doubt. But you know, but at the same time, that's all you can get. It's all you can get.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with frozen stuff.
No, there's not. But fresh tastes better.
Yes, it does. And honestly, I've you know, my wife's from the Bahamas, been to the Bahamas. I've eaten spiny lobster like straight out of the ocean. I mean, like it was literally swimming 5 seconds ago before we cooked it and ate it.
Nice.
And yeah, it does taste different. I mean, definitely better. I'm still not big. I'm not a big fan of lobster, but
I'm not either. It's a little too sweet.
Yeah, there's something, I don't know. I don't know what it is. There's just something, maybe it's the texture. I don't know. There's something.
It has a similar, well, no, because crab meat is a little more flaky than lobster meat.
Yeah. I mean, lobster is more like shrimp. I mean, and I like rock shrimp. I think rock shrimp are the bomb.
I don't really care for rock shrimp, all the gritty.
Yeah, but you know,
the dirt that's in it.
Yeah. You know, they're fucking bottom feeders, Dave. What do you say?
Oh, I know.
But anyway,
digress. Yeah. So, but Goodman figured that Lou was either extremely unlucky because of all of the people that are close to him were dying, or he had a hand in the deaths.
Yeah.
So he started looking into the deaths on Angel's Landing, and he noticed that all of the policies paid out to people who lived on the commune, and all of the deaths coincided with the bank accounts getting low, and then miraculously another person would die, and presto, mo money.
There's nothing suspicious about that at all.
No, not at all.
No.
Well, you see, I placed an ad in the newspaper and I talked about living a great life, but your safety is not guaranteed.
But your safety is not guaranteed. Shit. All right.
So, in 2007, Goodman followed Lou to a restaurant and he watched from a distance as Lou ate, and he asked the manager for the dishes, hoping to find fingerprints on the dishes, but there were none. But Detective Goodman didn't give up. Next, he printed a bunch of 4x6 photos of suspects in various crimes, and he went right up to Lou's door saying that there had been a rash of burglaries in the area, and he asked Lou if he would take a look at the photos and see if he recognized anybody. Like, seen anybody in those pictures in that area. They were just random pictures.
Right.
But Lou went through all the photos, but what he did was he dumped the photos out onto a pool table and spread them out, touching only the corners of the pictures, and he used his fingernails to move the pictures around, therefore leaving no fingerprints.
Okay.
At that point, Ron was positive that Lou was hiding something, you know, going out of the way to not leave fingerprints like that, and it also explained the dishes at the restaurant. So this is just either Lou knew that he was being tailed that day at the restaurant, or that's just how he lived everyday life. I'm betting on the latter.
Yeah, it's probably how he lived. That's probably how he lived his life, so he couldn't get caught at anything.
Right. So,
so they couldn't find out who he really was. Probably more the case. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Lou said that he had to move, and he told Sarah. He says they were looking for me, but put a knife in that.
Oh, shit.
Detective Goodwin enlisted the help of Detective Clint Snyder, who had been instrumental in the newly solved BTK case. And
no thanks to our story.
I have a feeling we'll be hearing from Snyder again soon.
Okay.
On an upcoming episode.
Okay.
He also brought in FBI agent John Sullivan, and they ran every bit of information that they had, but they came up with nothing. And at this point, we're in 2008. So now back to Sarah and Emily. So we're backing up several years back to around 2003, but this part will end in the present spot of the timeline, which is 2008.
Okay, Quentin Tarantino, let's get it over with.
Sarah had a bit of a rebellious streak to her, and Lou knew it. When he asked her to do something and she didn't, Arthur would come out to play, and he would scream at her and belittle her. And he would tell her that she was broken and that he was the only one that could fix her.
Did he ask her to Simonize his car?
I still don't get that.
Really? You never seen the movie Arthur with Dudley Moore?
Oh, okay. It's been decades
since I've seen that movie. But I don't know. As soon as you said Arthur, that's the first thing I thought. And actually, the remake with Russell Brand isn't too bad either.
I don't think I've seen the remake.
It's the same story.
Russell Brand, if it's got Russell Brand in it, it's got to be good. That guy's really good.
Yeah, it was really good. Fuck, new vape. It's killing me. Yeah, that's when you said Arthur. I mean, even the first time you said it, last episode or whatever, that's what I thought of.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on.
So he would tell her this constantly, and finally she started to believe it. And one day the two of them were alone in his house, and Lou decided that it was now or never. She needed to be fixed right then or there, or she'd never be fixed. He told her that unless he fixed her, she'd never be able to have children. And Sarah thought that he meant that he was going to fix her so that one day she could marry and have children of her own. Mm-hmm. She didn't realize that she meant his children.
Yeah.
And this comes straight from Sarah in an interview in that documentary.
Right.
He raped her, and when he was done, Sarah asked if she was fixed now, and he said no, she would never be fixed. Pretty convenient.
But he's going to keep trying.
Yep. He said he would always have to have sex with her to make her stay fixed. And then he said that if she ever told anybody, that he would kill her dad, and her dad wasn't even in the cult.
Wow. That is a big piece of shit.
Yeah. Indeed.
Or a big pile of shit, whatever you want.
That is a big pile of shit. We need to get that on a drop.
All right, I'll work on it.
So Sarah did her best to be subservient to Lou to protect her dad, and
it's easy for you to say.
I screwed up while trying to say self-confidence.
Yeah, how bad is that?
Oh God.
All right, let's see if you can get it right this time.
Damn it.
Anyway,
give me the drum roll again.
All right, here we go. Take three, maybe.
Her self-confidence and rebellious streak were gone. Lou.
It's too much fun. Sorry.
You need to stop trying to kill me like that. I don't have a big life insurance policy. So Lou likely told Emily something very similar, but even if Jennifer had found out, Lou had Emily in his house, so they were locked in, and Jennifer couldn't leave even if she wanted to. That's probably something that we're gonna wind up talking with Jody about the mind control.
Mm-hmm.
So, as we mentioned before, Lou, the all-knowing, eternal, almighty, angelic asshole, could see into the future. So, we're literally picking up right where we left off before. But Lou and Sarah and Emily, you know, Lou had Lou. God. Lou has Sarah and Emily completely brainwashed into all of his bullshit and convinced that he did in fact know all and that they had better do whatever he said. And like I said, the money was running out and he sat Emily and Sarah down one day and said that it was Jennifer, their mother's time to die.
Oh boy. All right.
Sarah may have seen through the bullshit, but she still had to go along with it because, you know, she's brainwashed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And she didn't, she said that she didn't want her mom to die and, you know, pick somebody else.
Pick somebody else. I mean, I'm sorry I laughed at that, but that's just.
No, it.
Anyway. Yeah.
The comical aspect of these stories, you know, depends, you know, depends on people not really knowing what it is laughable.
Yeah.
But the thing is if you're conditioned to, you know, if you go through all of this mental abuse and all that stuff, somebody just basically tearing down every bit of your inner being and all that stuff to subjugate you into doing whatever the hell they want to, you know, it's laughable on the outside looking in, but still it's very real. Like,
yeah.
You know, like a, you know, a lot of these cases, like, you know, abductions and stuff like that, they had chances to get away, but they didn't because they were scared.
Oh yeah.
You know, and that doesn't mean that they did anything wrong or were complicit or liked the setup or scenario or anything like that. It just meant that they were in survival mode and doing whatever it took to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, the money was running out and he sat, and I already said that. But, yeah, she said to pick somebody else, and that's why I think that she may have seen through it. Yeah, as before, I already said that too.
What happened? Did your nose roll back on you?
Okay, I had those two paragraphs in there twice. But
well,
Lou said
you won.
Yeah. But Lou said, no, it had to be Jennifer. And the girls
sure
cry.
Was Lou or was it Arthur?
Huh?
Are we sure it was Lou or was it Arthur?
I think it was Amber.
Oh yeah, that's right. Amber is the angel of death. That's
angel
right.
of death. Yeah.
Yeah. See. Anyway.
So the girls cried, and Sarah went to Jennifer and told her that she was next, according to Lou. Jennifer brushed it off like she wasn't worried about it, and she had heard Lou's death talk before. But Jennifer, my dearest, precious Jennifer. Every single one of those death visions came to pass. Run, girl, run. Get the fuck out of there. Take
right?
your kids and get the fuck out.
Time to bounce. Shit.
Indeed.
Anyway.
But he probably had her mind so gunked up and everything. She's like, well, it doesn't matter if I leave or not. If I'm supposed to die, I'm going to die regardless of what I do.
Exactly. Exactly.
So. September 22nd, 2008, Jennifer went to work as normal. Sarah, now 24 years old, had tried to call her, but she didn't answer. And around 5 p.m., Lou came in and said that Jennifer had been in a car accident. Sarah knew immediately that she was dead, but Lou didn't say anything. He walked off, and Sarah, angry at this point, began screaming at him, demanding to know what he had done to her mom.
Yeah.
Jennifer had run into a dump truck and was killed instantly.
Oh, wow. Yep, that'll do it.
Yeah, indeed. Especially if the dump truck is sitting at a red light.
Mm-hmm.
Dump truck comes off with a couple scratches on it. The car's totaled.
Yeah, if you even scratched the dump truck.
Right.
Fuck.
But Detective Goodwin and his team looked into Jennifer's death with much interest. This now confirmed a pattern, and once again, a $1 million life insurance policy that got paid out to somebody living on the commune. So Goodwin said that he believed that Lou had warped Jennifer's mind so much that she just committed suicide, and I'm not sure what I think on that one. My first thought was that he cut Jennifer's brake lines, but that would have come out in the investigation.
Yeah.
Witnesses claim that she had plenty of time to see the dump truck and react.
Yeah, that happens.
But like all cult leaders, when they see the writing on the wall, they split. So Lou rounded everybody up and told them they were going to Tennessee. Yeah, and he convinced Emily by telling her that they'd be near Vanderbilt, which is the school that she had dreamed of going to. So Emily was sold on the move, but we all know that he wasn't going to send her to Vanderbilt.
Oh, no. Oh, man. All right.
In fact, I don't even think that she was going to high school at this point, to be honest with you.
Oh, wow. All right.
I don't know. There's nothing there that says yay or nay, but, you know, cult leaders like their members to be uneducated.
Yes.
So he probably took her out of school, or like maybe like a dropout, basically. And he damn sure wasn't gonna. Well, no, because if she doesn't finish high school, she can't go to Vanderbilt. So she had to have still been in school.
Okay. But anyway.
But Sarah, on the other hand, told Lou to fuck off.
Good for her.
Yeah. She was an adult and she didn't want to be away from her father. Evil, scary Arthur even took a crack at Sarah. But she told Lou's imaginary British body inhabitant to fuck off as well.
Hell yeah. Brilliant.
If Lou had insisted that she needed more fixing at that point, she probably would have told him to fuck off for that too. Fix you.
Fix you, mother fixer. I had to, you know.
Fix you, mother fixer. That's a t-shirt.
Yeah, it is now. It's definitely going to be one. Fix as soon as we find a good place.
Yeah, and I'm looking into that.
Yeah, I am too. But yeah, I mean, as soon as we find a decent place.
I don't want to charge people like $50 for a t-shirt. And if we use what I've found so far, that's pretty much about what we would have to pay.
Yeah, it's either that or we don't make any money from them at all.
Right. So.
We're not looking to get rich off of t-shirts, but you know, a little something would be nice.
Yeah. I mean, we have monthly bills that we have to pay to keep the podcast up. It'd be nice if we could get those paid.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be happy if we could just pull that off.
Yeah. We'll get there. We have one Patreon subscriber.
Yeah. We've started. We have.
Yep. And I'm looking at the rest of you.
Yes.
What's on that Patreon page? What's on it?
I don't think you can harass Ariana to make her tell you what's on it for nothing. You just got to go pay the $4, dude. It's one friggin' beer. Just pay the $4. Join for a month. Find out.
There's some good stuff on it. There really is. There's some really bad stuff on it too. Like what should have been a half pint episode, like 45 minutes long, that turned out to be like an hour and a half because we tried to record it after recording the John Gotti episode.
Yeah.
And it's not good when we try to do two episodes in one night. But we put it on there pretty much unedited. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it gets a little out of control.
But still, in a staunch act of bravery and savagery as well, she left the commune while the rest, including Emily, took off to Columbia, Tennessee. Sarah then, while at a bar with a friend, met a normal guy named David McGrath.
And a normal guy.
Yeah, he, from the pictures of the documentary, was Army. And she asked him to dance, and the sparks were flying. They exchanged phone numbers. They stayed in touch, dated, and then they got married. And over the course of their relationship, she would open up somewhat about what had gone on during her time in the cult.
Okay.
David, I got a man crush on David. We'll get there. You will too after I tell you what this guy
I know. I have a sense. But even before you said that, I had a sense it was coming.
Yeah. But he David's not sure what to make of all this, and rightfully so, but he stuck by her side. But Lou, likely panicking because of a potential loose end, he would call her, and David would listen in on the phone conversations, which usually ended up in the screaming matches between Sarah and Lou. But the last time it happened, David grabbed the phone and said, "Look, motherfucker, don't you ever call here again." And he hung up. And, he then asked Sarah if Lou had sexually abused her. And apparently Lou never called back. So he is a fucking gutless coward.
Yeah.
Sarah then came clean with David about everything that had happened.
Uh-oh.
And before we move forward, I want a round of applause for David.
Yes.
Yeah, David is a class act, and I can't as a cult survivor tell you how many times I've brought it up to potential partners or friends, and they've assumed somehow I was broken or weird and not worthy of the treatment that a quote normal person deserves. Yeah. Well, one psycho ex in particular of mine would throw it up in my face and use it a weapon against me. So fuck them. And I tip my hat to you, David. You, sir, are a class act.
Yes, sir. Cheers.
Cheers. And I'm going to go off script here. And sorry, not sorry.
Right.
I knew going public about my experience would have consequences. Mm-hmm. And I did it years before we started this podcast. And that's one thing that survivors always have to deal with when deciding whether or not they want to talk about it. But if any cult survivor is listening and they haven't gone public, or maybe even somebody that's listening that actually is in a cult presently, take this into consideration. If anybody, and I mean if anybody, distances themselves from you or uses it against you, fuck them. They aren't worth your time. I don't care who it is, from a coworker to a parent or even a significant other, a brother, a sister, anybody. If they brush you off or cheapen it by, you know, oh, you're making a mountain out of a molehill or whatever. If they're trying to do anything other than be supportive of you, fuck them. You don't need them.
Not literally, but you know.
Right. So.
Sorry.
If you want to go public with your story, it'll be beneficial to your psychological well-being to share it with somebody. And if somebody holds that against you, like you had a choice in the matter, especially if you were raised in a cult as a kid, like I was, and like Sarah and Emily were, they don't deserve you in their lives.
Exactly right.
But let me climb down off of my soapbox. But I 100% meant every word of that. And if you're a cult survivor who wants to talk, shoot me an email at ckcvpodcast@gmail.com. I'd be more than happy to do it. I'd be more than happy to talk to you. I've done it I've talked to a lot of people since we released episodes 10 and 11 on this podcast. So, yeah. And I'll do that for anybody. Doesn't have to be the cult that I was raised in, any of them.
Right on.
Because I apparently don't sound like a cult survivor.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't seem like, was it seem or sound? Did he say, he said sound, right?
Yeah,
you don't sound like a cult survivor. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, but so I mean, it's just Yeah. I mean,
whatever.
Yeah. Do I sound like a cult survivor when I'm ranting against cults? Because the
You do, to me, but I know.
I see fucking red every time I go through something like that. You know, and yeah. And you so yeah. So there it is.
Yep, there it is. Anyway.
Whoop, there it is. Okay, now. All right.
Not to take anything away from everything that Bill just said, but moving on.
Yeah. Needed to be said, especially since we haven't covered a cult since April.
Oh yeah, no. I wasn't trying to take anything away from what you just said at all, but moving on.
So, anyway, David McGrath, the amazing human being that he is, he took it upon himself to help Sarah, her sister Emily, and any other girl Lou might come into contact with in the future. And he had to do it. Sarah didn't know that he was doing this, but he sent an email to the FBI and listed all the things that Sarah suspected about the insurance murders and the sexual abuse.
Oh.
The FBI contacted him, and apparently Lou now had a new name, Joe Venegas. Or Venegas?
Venegas.
Venegas.
Whatever.
And he was now living in Tennessee.
Pile of shit, no matter what its name is.
Yeah. And this name came out in the phone calls that David was listening in on. That's how he got the name Joe Venegas.
Okay.
The FBI brought David in for an interview by himself, and Sarah still at this point had no clue that he was doing it. Why? Because the FBI knew how cults work and how their claws and brainwashing works. So they knew that if Sarah was aware, she might warn Lou.
Yeah, she could possibly, yeah.
So not that she would, just that she could.
Yeah, there was a chance. Yeah.
So Goodwin, Snyder, and Sullivan were brought in, and they were giddy. It's like, we got this. They were giddy. But.
Oh, I was just giddy. That made me laugh because it was just like, giddy is not a word I would use to describe law enforcement officials, even when they're. Excited when they're about to crack a case that they've been working on with no leads forever. I mean, yeah, giddy is not the word I would use, but yeah, I'm sure they were. Don't get me wrong.
Okay, ecstatic.
That's a little better. Yeah, giddy is just, I don't know. To me, anyway, I mean, but who the hell am I?
Ecstatic, yeah, ecstatic is a better word.
I'm just plucky comic relief on a podcast that, you know, that we just talk about stuff. We don't.
But they needed one more thing in order to nail Lou to the wall. Take a guess.
Oh Jesus. They needed one more thing. Oh God. DNA?
No. Nope.
I'm overthinking it. It's gotta be something simple. They needed what's her name to testify?
Sarah,
yeah, they needed her to testify or come or something. I don't know.
Yeah, Sarah. But they needed Sarah. But Goodwin, Snyder, and Sullivan had followed the money, and they presented this information to the FBI, who allowed them to go after Lou. They started off building an insurance fraud case against him. They were hoping to catch him using this new identity, and then done deal. They just get him on that alone. You know, identity fraud obviously is a federal crime.
Oh yeah.
So good, you know, going freaking was Al Capone on him.
Yeah, so they're gonna get him with the RICO Act.
So Goodwin knew that it had been about 2 years since the last person died, and now the bank account was low. They had to move on this now before somebody else died. And Lou, the all-knowing, omnipotent angel that he is, didn't know that there would be cameras in the bank when he opened an account under the name Joe Venegas. Or Venegas or whatever.
Venegas. That sounds like a Latin name from Monty Python or something. Anyway, so yeah, okay. First of all, what year is it? It's the mid 2000s.
No, it's like probably by now it's probably like 2010.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's what I meant. Like the mid 2010s ish.
Yeah.
And you don't know that there's cameras in banks.
Yeah, but those cameras that they have like in the bank when you're, I mean, they are good cameras. They're not like the freaking grainy bullshit.
So, yeah, the convenience store CC cameras. Yeah. It's like, do you know this man? I'm like, there's a guy there. Yeah. What you mean that blob? I might know him. I don't know. I can't tell who it is.
It looks to me like a scrambled channel from 80s cable.
Yeah, don't get me started on that. Do you know who that guy? Oh yeah, dude. I watched tons of Skinamax on Scramble Vision.
Oh yeah.
I can identify anything.
watch long enough, you might see a boob.
Yeah, it might actually come in clear too. Anyway, not the point.
For like a split second.
Yeah, for only a second. If you blink, you miss it.
Yeah. Boob! There's a boob.
Where? No, there wasn't.
It's gone now. Anyway,
it's gone now. Yeah. Fuck. Anyway, all right. Now that we fucking waps rhapsodic about fucking Scramble Vision, let's get back to the show.
So the FBI arrested him under the name Lou Castro, and he tried spilling his manipulation and lies, and the FBI told Lou to fuck off.
Oh, they didn't believe him that he could predict their deaths and that he was a 1,000-year-old angel?
Can you imagine? All right, you be the FBI agent, I'll be Lou. I'm innocent. I'm an angel. I'm 3,000 years old, and I can predict death, and I think that you're going to die.
No, you can't.
Fuck.
That is a big piece of shit. Yeah. That is a big pile of shit right there, my good sir.
Would you like to join my cult?
What's in it for me if I do?
Death?
No, thanks.
Damn it.
Hey, you want to know something funny? I bet I can predict your death. One less big pile of shit in the world.
So he was taken away in handcuffs. Lou was interrogated for 6 hours, but he wouldn't budge. But there was one thing that they got this time that Goodwin wasn't able to get before, but not due to lack of trying. Take a guess.
Fingerprints.
You got it.
Yay, I got one right.
Finally realizing who Lou actually was, he pleaded guilty to the fraud charges, and he got 2 years in prison for that. He wasn't offered a deal, but he figured that if he pled guilty, nothing else would be brought up. He thought wrong. And because of
okay, sure, you can think of that, buddy.
Yeah, but because of this, I'm guessing that he represented himself because an attorney would have presented a plea deal.
Yeah, but you know what they say,
a man who represents himself has an idiot for a client.
Yes. More or less.
Old Ben Franklin.
Yep.
You know what Ben Franklin also said? He said, beer is proof that the good Lord loves us. He just wants us all to be happy.
That's right. He did say that.
We got to do an episode on Ben Franklin.
You know, Ben Franklin was a horn dog too.
Yeah, he was. I think that would be an interesting CKCB episode.
It would be fun. But yeah, anyway.
Goodwin was happy with the verdict. You know, 2 years would give him plenty of time to nail Lou to the wall and everything else. The sexual abuse of minors and murder. But backtracking a bit, he couldn't go on Sarah and David's hearsay alone. He couldn't go on David's hearsay alone. He needed a witness for that. Enter Sarah, but put a knife in that.
Hey.
Goodwin began interviewing everybody he could find about Lou Castro, and finally the name Daniel Perez came up, and when Goodwin ran that, a mugshot of Lou's pathetic face came back, and Lou Castro and Daniel Perez were the same person. Now enter Sarah and Emily. They began talking to detectives, and they were scared that if they spoke up that they'd be implicated as well. You know, but the detectives quickly quashed those fears, and once again we see the hooks that cult leaders have in their victims. And they are victims.
Yes, they are.
More importantly, they're survivors. But Sarah and Emily had nothing to worry about. They weren't going to be charged with anything if they talked. Lou would be going away for a long time. So Emily told Goodwin about how Patricia had actually died, and she and Sarah told their stories about the sexual abuse. Goodwin and his team also put together a case against Lou, and on the last day of his 2-year sentence, he was set free, but he was rearrested the moment he walked out the door.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, geez. I hope they did that shit on purpose too.
Of course.
I mean, I'm sure they did, but that is, oh, dude, that is beautiful.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. You're free to go.
No, you're not. You're under arrest.
Whatever your name is, Lou Castro, Rabino, whatever the fuck your name is, you're under arrest. Wait, you just let me go. I know. Sucks, don't it?
He had no clue that this new case was being put together against him.
Well, you know, fool for a client, no?
Yeah. His charges this time? Glad you asked.
Yeah, what were his charges this time?
28 counts, including first degree murder on a child, as well as exploitation, sex crimes, and fraud.
All right.
And Sarah and Emily were the star witnesses. And without these two, Lou might have walked. And so raise your drinks to Sarah and Emily.
Hey, Sarah and Emily, thank you for not being afraid.
Yeah, and the whole time that was in court, Lou was giving them evil death looks whenever he could lock eyes with them, especially when they were on the stand, but they powered through. Actually, no, it wasn't Lou. It was Arthur.
Arthur.
It was Arthur. I'm going to look you. I'm going to look really mean at you. Because I'm an angel.
Named Arthur.
I'm Arthur, the angel, the mean one.
Oh, God. Okay. Anyway.
I'm intimidating. Rawr.
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 Rawr. I'm a monster.
I'm Arthur.
All right, Jesus Christ, we're getting stupid. Let's go. Stop trying to drag it out. Let's just get it over with.
But Emily was the only one who could tie Lou to Patricia's death. And Lou did his damnedest to rattle her. And, you know, I picture him like Charles Manson or Richard Ramirez making faces in court. You know, it can still be unnerving, but Emily stood tall. So you go, you badass.
Yes.
But Lou, when he took the stand, he just said, wasn't me.
Wasn't me. But I looked right at you. Wasn't me.
But that makes me believe that even more that he represented himself. I mean, he insisted.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah. He insisted that all of the allegations of supernatural dribble that he was accused of could have only come from a deranged person. And he wasn't lying this time. He was 100% right.
Yeah.
Then he claimed that the stories about supernatural abilities and all that stuff was an invention of the prosecution.
Really? Fuck. Well, he just grasping at straws now, isn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, no, Jesus. All right.
And he said that he wasn't a seer or an angel. I'm not a seer or an angel.
Sure. Well, yeah, we all know that, but.
Yeah, we all know that, but thank you for clarifying.
Yeah. You weren't fooling anybody you told that to, so it's all right.
Other than the people that are brainwashed.
You know what I mean.
So he also oh God, he also said something about an injury to his genitals kept him from being able to have sex with unwilling partners.
Huh? The fuck does that even mean?
An injury to his genitals prevented him from having sex with unwilling partners.
Oh, I know. I heard what you said. I'm trying to figure out what it means.
And he only had sex with legal age partners.
No.
So I've never heard of an injury that discriminates.
I know, right? I how does he?
It's like, okay, this one's 14. This one's 18.
Yeah, I mean, how does he fucking expect anybody to believe that shit? Even Vanna's laughing at that one.
Yeah. But too bad he's lying about that. I wish he had been lying passed out naked in the grass and a rattlesnake had bit him in the nuts.
Yes.
They do have.
Better yet, bit him right in the taint. The taint would have been even better.
Oh, yeah. But a rattlesnake wouldn't have been able to latch onto that, though.
Yeah, you're right.
But they have rattlesnakes in Plano, Kansas, right? Yeah, it's a prairie state. Of course they do.
I have no idea.
They have sidewinders there.
Sidewinders.
I'm a snake.
Dude, don't talk about a sidewinder, man. Them sidewinders move quick, bro. Don't make fun of them, dude. You're bringing bad juju.
You know, there's
we're gonna be driving through Plano, Kansas, because we have to avoid Texas, dude. And goddamn fucking herd of sidewinders are gonna fucking just gang rape us.
Yeah, there's a supernatural belief that, you know, rattlesnakes actually hold the souls of the reincarnated souls of like murderers, and they're given a second chance to redeem themselves, so they they have the ability to kill people, but they have to make the conscious choice not to.
Okay.
And that makes absolutely no sense.
And who are these people that think this?
The same people that
the church snake people, right? Not the people that.
No, it's not them. I
forget what they're called.
Years ago, when I was like 18, 19 years old, there was we used to go out and hang out at Denny's, you know, late at night, because we weren't old enough to get into bars. Actually, it started when I was like 16, but
sit at Denny's, drink coffee, and smoke cigarettes.
Yep.
Until like 4 or 5 in the morning. Yeah, I know.
Yep. So, but there was this old man who was also a regular there, and he would come, you know, he thought he was like a fortune teller, and he could see, and we just basically kind of, you know, patronized him because he was good to laugh about later.
Right.
But he said that.
So rattlesnakes are the souls of murderers, and they can't kill anybody unless they choose to.
Right. They have the ability to
not kill.
Right. Or to not bite.
To not bite.
Right.
Okay. No.
I've never heard of a rattlesnake being like, you know what, I'm not going to bite you. But that's why they had the rattle.
Yeah.
Get away.
Yeah. I mean, if you startle, I mean, like, dude, if a rattlesnake is 10 feet away from you and you're walking the other way, a rattlesnake isn't going to bother you at all.
No.
I mean, if you sneak right up on one while it's like sleeping or something, and you wake it up,
bite you.
Dude, it's going to coil up and rattle. And if you don't like get away quick, it will strike. And it's actually, not, you and know it's what? Not striking because it wants to kill you. It's striking because like you scared the shit out of me, bro. It's time for you to go.
Actually, you know what? The whole thing about the rattle. Now I can kind of see where that belief originated from, because they have a warning system.
They do. They warn you.
Okay. Okay. So that's not as crazy as I thought it was initially. No, it's still crazy. It's still crazy, but it's not as crazy as I thought it was initially. There's at least some logic behind it.
Yeah, you could put it that way. I mean, yeah, they warn you, but I mean, even then, like if you're close enough to where a snake is, you startle a rattlesnake and it starts rattling at you, it's probably already going to strike. You just need to move.
Right.
Don't sit there and go, oh, look at the snake. No, get the fuck out of there. Because, you know, all venomous snakes can strike like twice their body length.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a terrifying thought.
Indeed. Especially considering, well, the Eastern Diamondback, which is the ones that we have in Florida, those can get about 10, 12 feet long.
Yeah.
So 24 feet.
It can launch its whole body at you and strike if it wants to, and you can't stop it.
Mm-mm.
Blink of an eye, you've got fangs sunk into your taint.
So we have
it's all over.
We have alligators, we have Burmese pythons, and we have the largest breed of rattlesnakes in the world.
Yeah. and we have panthers.
Yeah. But and you know what? The Eastern Diamondback rattlesnake, in my opinion, is the coolest looking one of the rattlesnakes.
Oh, it is. Totally. All right. Now, let's see. We're doing it again. Dude. Stop it. Let's just finish and be done. You got me. You wrote me into this fucking snake thing. Try to drag out this episode. Let's just be done with it. I get tired. I got shit to do.
He then claimed that, you know, memory loss after the beating that he took in 1997, and he was probably referring to the beating by police officers that he claimed happened in Texas on the way to courthouse. But he couldn't, you know, he couldn't say the police officer part because that would be easily debunked.
Oh, yeah.
So,
this guy, what a fucking big pile of shit. Oh, my God.
He also said that he didn't know where all the commune money was coming from.
What?
But that claim went nowhere when the insurance company and the insurance policy payout were put on the table with him or somebody in the cult as the beneficiary.
Uh-huh.
This must have been hilarious to watch for everybody in that courtroom.
Yes. I mean, it is. I mean, I know this is not where they got their name from, but this is mental illness theater.
Indeed.
I mean, and you know, I love that name. I love Mark and Gina.
Yeah.
You know, but they have the best podcast name I think I've ever heard.
Definitely for a true crime podcast. Hell yeah. Yes.
And when Mark explained it, like how they got it, I'm like, this isn't the particular case, but this is the kind of thing they were talking about.
Exactly.
Yes. I mean, yeah. Watching this guy just go through all this crap to try to get loose. I mean, yeah, it's mental illness theater for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Love you guys, Mark and Dina. Cheers.
Yeah. So the jury deliberated for 3 hours before coming back with a verdict of guilty on all 28 counts.
It only took 3 hours?
Only took 3 hours.
Well, I mean, that seems excessively long.
Yeah, it does. Should have taken like 3 minutes.
I mean, yeah, it should have taken 3 minutes. So what do you think? He's guilty. Everything. Fry him.
Let's go get a beer.
Yeah.
So.
I know. You got to make me sit here and talk through each and every count. Okay, yes. Guilty. Guilty.
Yeah.
Guilty.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So, no, they're probably sitting there like, we all know he's guilty.
Right. So let's just stay here and make them think like we were actually talking about it.
So James, what do you do for a living?
Yeah, exactly. They probably just hung out and fucking bullshit. Like, we all know we're gonna vote guilty. Let's just hang out for a little bit. We haven't had a chance to talk.
Yeah. I mean, like, we've been on the jury for however long the trial's been going. I wanna know about you.
Yeah, I want to know about you. Like, how are you? How's your family doing?
How are you? Yeah. Can you believe this fucking idiot?
Can you believe this fucking idiot? He really thinks he's going to get away with this shit. Okay.
Oh, wait. He's not guilty. He really is an angel. What? Just kidding.
What? Just kidding. Psych.
So he got two life sentences, one for Patricia's murder, one for sexual exploitation of a child. He got 34 years for the remaining counts, and he'll die in prison. And I'm seriously hoping that he's somebody's bitch.
Oh, yeah, for sure. <He's>, yeah.
So in the end, it was all Lou. It was all about Lou and what Lou wanted. And you know what? I'm actually going to walk back what I said about him actually committing murder. Although I do think that he did murder Patricia, because you think she whacked herself in the head. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like that. It's like that other case. Yeah. She committed suicide and wrapped herself in a tarp and tied it with a belt.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That happened. Anyway.
But that was the official story on that case.
I know. And that's terrible.
Episode 66. But
is that the one that's kind of got us banned from Dallas? No, that's not that one.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It is.
Oh, it is that one. That is the one that got us banned from Dallas. Okay.
Yes.
Well, so possibly. We're not entirely sure we're really banned, but
right.
But I'm not going to test that theory.
He persuaded these victims to commit suicide and convincing them that he would bring them back. And the only murder that he committed, other than Patricia Hughes, who he whacked in the head, causing her to drown, was the unconfirmed body double that was found in Mexico.
Okay.
Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
I still don't know how he managed to... Well, Corpus Christi... Probably looking at about like maybe 6 hours to the Mexican border from Corpus Christi.
What is it? I have no idea.
Maybe 5, 6, something like that.
Well, that's fine. Doesn't matter. Everybody has a doppelganger, dude. You just have to look hard enough.
Yeah, but this guy looks...
And if you pay the right people, they can make anybody look like you, so it don't matter.
True.
You know, anyway.
I would like to know what actually happened with that double that was found. And
yeah, like, who was that? Who was that guy?
Who was that guy? And
like, what was his story?
How did Lou even know him? Because there wasn't enough,
that even come about?
There wasn't enough time for them to like do plastic surgery on him, for him to get down there, find, you know, a guy that had his build and everything, and then do plastic surgery and then dump it. We're talking about like less than 36 hours, more than likely. So I really would like to know what happened there.
Yeah.
But
anyway, yeah, I mean, I guess that's a story for another time.
Yeah.
As Disney Star Wars likes to tell us. Oh, shit, I went there. Fuck.
People don't realize the extent of mental abuse and conditioning that cult members go through at the hands of sadistic and narcissistic cult leaders. These people are highly intelligent, and you may think that you'd never fall victim to one of them, but what if you're literally at rock bottom with no way out, and the savior comes along and shows you everything that you want to see? So never, never say never, and for God's sake, stop treating survivors, you know, not just cult victims, every survivor, like they did something wrong. That goes for rape, child abuse, spouse abuse, male or female, anything else. Like, you know, it could happen to you.
It could.
And that's it. That's all I got.
Yay, it's over.
So, thanks for listening. We appreciate the hell out of it. The shortest episode we've done in a long time.
Is it really?
Well, yeah, you got to figure like 15 minutes of this.
Well, I mean, we cut out the break. Yeah, I got you. Yeah. But still, it's all right, dude. We can do short ones, man. You covered all the information.
So
some of it twice.
So yeah, I mean, just, you know, we appreciate the hell out of you listening. Hook us up with 5-star review.
Even if you hate us.
Well, if you like us, tell a friend. If you hate us, tell an enemy.
Yeah. And if you talk to your enemies, I mean, I don't necessarily talk to my enemies, but whatever.
You can send them an email. Hey, asshole, I hate you, but check out this podcast. Yeah. I hate it so much I want you to hear it.
Yeah, right. Fucking DM them because you have your enemies in your fucking DMs. Oh, jeez. Anyway, sorry, I digress. Oh, no, I didn't really digress, but, you know.
No. But,
you know, what he just said. Go to our website.
Yeah, it's got all our socials on there, Patreon.
All the socials, and check them all out and stuff.
I think I'm going to release the Abraham Lincoln Patreon episode as a, like a Patreon preview.
Okay.
So people kind of know what they're, or should I do,
you know,
the Attack of the Dead Men.
See, that one's too recent, dude.
Well, the Abraham Lincoln one was, that was good.
Yeah, do the Lincoln one.
Yeah, I'll release that.
Because, dude, we just did the fucking the 100 Men one, and we can't put that. You can't do that one yet.
Yeah, that's true.
We just did that. And Ariana hasn't got her $4 worth out of that one yet.
So yeah, we're gonna, yeah, I'll release the Abraham Lincoln one. That was a really fun episode.
I know. I learned some shit I didn't know.
Yeah, you and me both. So,
and in case you might think otherwise, he was not a vampire hunter. Just saying.
So, anyway, yeah, I'm gonna get that out. Not that shit. I'll probably do that like in the next day or two. Okay. So that will come out, and then later on, this episode where we're talking about doing it will come out.
So we don't have to do like fucking 10 more episodes in a row.
Right.
Or back to back. I'm just fucking with you, man.
No, we still have.
I know. Yeah. We still have. I know what we have to do. It's fine.
All right. Until next week later.
Cheers, everybody. Be fucking good to each other. All right.
Cult outro.
I know. I'm getting there, fucker. Oh, nope. Not that one.